God at the movies. It is the general idea that God is at work everywhere. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can hear not just God speaking, but also the cries of humanity, the questions people have, the stories that are resonating in culture and in societies. Engage with what it is that the media, the movies, the TV shows, critically think through them, and not in a way where you're like critiquing them all the time, but in a way where you're engaging with them in a meaningful way. What is it about this that resonates with you? What's true about it? What's false about it? What are the claims of this that are not true? What are the things that are happening? We shouldn't turn our brain off. We shouldn't turn our spirit off. We shouldn't turn God off, ever. How do we begin to attune to stories that move us, why they move us, how we see God at work in the world? So this is a series kind of along those lines.
All right, welcome to the Right Side Up podcast with James Scholl.
And with Danielle Strickland. And today, with the one and the only, very, very exciting, Lisa Sharon Harper. Oh man, am I excited for this?
Lisa Sharon Harper's in the house. Lisa, I just want to say this. When you put on, so we on Twitter, you just said, hey, let's talk about Queen Charlotte.
Yeah.
And I said to James, hey, Lisa reached out on Twitter and said she'd talk about Queen Charlotte. And James and I both were like, okay, we're going to watch
Queen Charlotte. Watching Queen Charlotte.
So that we can talk about it.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Well, I saw, actually, I thought it was an Instagram post. And I saw the picture of Queen Charlotte, and I am a Queen Charlotte. I'm a Bridgerton buff. Okay. Let's just put it that way. I love me some Bridgerton. And I don't even honestly know all of the reasons why. I'm still trying to figure that out in therapy.
That's funny. But I was going to ask you, what attracts you to Bridgerton in general? Like,
well, can we talk? All right. So the biggest reason I have to say is because Shonda Rhimes. I realized if I was ever to defect, I would defect into Shondaland. Like I would literally change citizenship and become a citizen of Shondaland if it was a thing. I really would. Because what she does in all of her pieces, everything she does, is she reimagines the boundaries of what is possible in human relationships. And she asks the question, what if we did not have hierarchies of human belonging? That's really her central question.
Yeah.
And she focuses it, of course, as a Black woman, in that in the place where the nexus of Black, the things that have held Black women back. And so we get to see a world where Black women are not held back in her land. And it is majestic. I mean, it's it is amazing.
And yeah, that's cool. So a shout out to Shonda Rhimes just from the get-go, because she is an extraordinary personality writer in fiction right now.
Yes.
And then she emphasizes, and I love this, she emphasizes that this is a work of imagination.
Yes.
So, and that's important because people, like a lot of people get caught up on the like, but that's not true. But you're like, no, it's a truth that's truer than true, people. And it's like this work of imagination, which is really important. And there has been a lack of imagination in this space. So I think that's also something that she offers. And she's super smart in that I feel like she's got this like wisdom that is like, she gives the people what they want and then like slips in a whole bunch of other stuff as well. Yes. It's like a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Yes. That's what I love about her, is that she doesn't hold back from the truth. And yet at the same time, she's really giving you fantasy, right? She's giving you, you're totally fantasy, right? But she also does not do that at the expense of the truth. I actually want to sit for a minute on this not history, but inspired by actual history thing.
Yep. Yep.
Because I think that what tends to happen in conversations, generally speaking with white folk, is that they go, oh, okay, so it's just imagination. We need to allow ourselves to be in fantasy land. Mm-hmm. But actually, this not history history is grounded in a lot of real history.
Like so Charlotte or Bridgerton?
Yes, the whole thing.
Well, the whole thing. Okay.
Not Bridgerton, but Queen Charlotte.
Yeah.
And the history that leads up to it and even in it. So do you mind if I kind of like go through a little bit of this history and you're
yeah, totally no, I would love it so much. And just for the record, so Bridgerton is a series that is just kind of like all on colonial, like in monarchy and all like English stuff, mm-hmm. and then has all the costumes and then it's a color diverse, like it's this yes. imagination thing. And yes. then a spinoff of Bridgerton is Queen Charlotte. Just for our okay. listeners, if you're not, if you haven't listened to this and you're not a Bridgerton fan, Queen Charlotte centers on this one specific character, which is inspired by true life. So go.
So look, like think about it this way, right? So the Moors, who were Northern Africans, they were based in Mauritania and, you know, basically all of Northern Africa and then some of like Northeastern Africa as well. They conquered the entire Iberian Peninsula, as in Spain, Italy, France, for 700 years, like from right. 711 to 1492. They were basically ruling. And then they were kicked out around 1492, which is interestingly, of course, that we know this is the year that Columbus sailed, you know, and got lost. but Shakespeare, like another, you know, Shakespeare has Othello, the Moor General of Venice. That's how he can have that Moor General of Venice, because the Moors were all up in that space. And because of that, they, of course, then married in to the people, they had sex with the people, they got babies with the people, and those people were both regular class people and royalty. Mm-hmm. So actually, the first Black royal in England was not Queen Charlotte. The first Black royal, and I should say royal of African descent, which is more accurate, was actually Queen Philippa, born in 1310, she was the first queen of England of African descent.
Mary. Wow.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? I thought you were going to say the first, I thought you were going to mention Meghan Markle. And I was like, no, that's not it. Okay.
No. That's a little too far down the line, but no.
Okay. Say the date again.
1310.
1310. Wow.
Right.
And so this would have been in a world that was dominated by African leaders, elite, royalty. Like this wouldn't be. So this is a. So that's in essence, this is part of what's this is part of what's like crazy about the show is that it's like fantasy, except it's not.
Yes.
But it's like fantasy for this culture to think about this because it's been whitewashed, literally.
Yes.
Like history has been whitewashed.
Yes. So Queen Philippa was known as like a very good and charming person. Joshua Barnes, a medieval writer, actually wrote about her that way. She was married to King Edward at York Minster in 1328, right? So then you have slavery grows in the British Empire and basically remains in Britain, inside Britain, until 1772. But they, and then at that point, they're not allowed to have slavery inside Britain, but they still have colonies. And we all know about the colonies. We were them, mm-hmm. Maryland, Virginia, South Carolina, Georgia. And that was like through the Revolutionary War.
Caribbean. Right. Yeah.
And then you have Barbados and Jamaica and British West Indies and others that are all the way into the 1800s during the period of Queen Charlotte. Right. Okay. So while Queen Charlotte, the one that we see in the film is, you know, walking around in all these royal robes, the reality is her kingdom is enslaving people, right? Like the reason she has all those diamonds is because of slavery. The reason is because of the rise of the British Empire. But there were other other people, Black people of privilege as well. In that era, you had Dido Elizabeth Bell, who is the namesake of the film Bell, which starred Gugu Mbatha-Raw. Mm-hmm. She was the daughter of Sir John Lindsay, a military man, and the niece of Chief Justice Sir William Murray, who decided decided the famous Zong case that laid legal foundations for that abolition of slavery inside of Britain and elsewhere. Mm. So, you know, so you have a lot of embedded historical facts. Also, I just thought this was kind of cool. I mean, I literally, you know, I've watched Confession. I have watched Queen Charlotte now three times, the whole thing three times.
Okay, wow.
It came out like a month ago, didn't it?
It did. I actually watched the whole thing in one day. like all six episodes in one day. And then I watched it again, maybe a few weeks later. And then I just recently watched it again for our conversation just to make sure.
So Lisa, this is partly why, because you are like connecting all the dots.
Yes.
In your historical understanding and in your justice, sort of like, guys, we actually have to talk about some truth here.
Yeah.
And this is all firing for you in this very popular sort of like, you know, whatever, what the drama, romance drama. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
In this fantasy romance drama thing, epic story, right? That is not his story, but grounded in historical fact. And so, so did you know that Queen Charlotte, this woman of African descent, introduced the Christmas tree to England? Did you know that?
No.
Isn't that, and do you know that they have a scene in the place? Remember when she says it needs more color? The Christmas tree needs more color.
Oh, well, that's that.
Their little wink at that. Aww. That was a little wink to say, oh, you know, she introduced the Christmas tree to England. You know, and how do we know that she was a person of African descent? She, because some people can, you know, they can test that. Mm-hmm. She was descended from German royalty. That is uncontested. But also descended from a Portuguese royal whose mistress was a Moor from Northern Africa. So it's not that she was black, but she was African. She was descendant of Africa. And contemporary people who actually talked about how she looked, talked about her being a darker hue and having a broad nose and having thicker lips. So she actually had African features. And when you look at most of the portraits that are made of her that we see today, they come from one portrait, artist, his name was Sir Thomas Lawrence, who painted Queen Charlotte as the palace wanted her to be painted, lighter, which is also a moment.
Remember? Yeah, I was going to say, there's a scene where the queen mother says, oh no, that's exactly the right color and you could go lighter. Yeah.
Go lighter, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And remember, Queen Charlotte was like, go, no, paint me as I am.
Yes.
Well, there were actually two artists that painted Queen Charlotte. There were three, but there were two main ones that painted Queen Charlotte on a regular basis. One was Sir Thomas Lawrence, which was the artist that painted her for the palace. And then there was Sir Alan Ramsay, who was an anti-slavery intellectual of the day, and he painted her closer to how she is. So he made sure to include her African features. Mm. And you'll see that like her coronation painting was done by Sir Ramsay. And you know, you can actually see these often like in her collection. So she had a large collection as well. Mm. There's this another moment or thing was that I thought was really interesting was that Queen Charlotte and King George were deeply in love with each other. And you know, Buckingham House was a real thing. Of course, now we know it as Buckingham Palace. Mm-hmm. And Kew was a real thing. Now we know it as Kew Gardens. But Charlotte lived at Kew, for both of them lived at Kew and Buckingham House. And she was actually known as the one who was the real gardener, which is really interesting. Like she had her own garden in fact, I think she's the one who developed Kew Gardens, which is what we know today.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so how about all that?
That's amazing. That's so good. And yeah. I mean, you brought this up already, but like, I mean, culturally, you know, one of the things is like, you know, what does this reflect about our humanity right now and our yes. life and our culture that's good and bad? Like, what is the phenomenon? Because it actually, Queen Charlotte is a phenomenon even bigger than Bridgerton.
Yes.
So Queen Charlotte, even though it's just like a sliver story out of Bridgerton, is like number one in 91 countries or something via Netflix. Right. So it's not just you, Lisa, watching this thing. It's 91 countries.
A million times.
So I was actually a little bit, like I was a bit rebuked by that in some ways because I haven't, you know, I didn't go there. I saw it and I was like, I'll get to it, but I never ever did until you were like, let's talk Queen Charlotte. Then I was like, I'm getting to that.
Got it. Gotta watch it.
Yeah. And then as I watched it, I got it. I was like, I see what's happening. You know, like I see there's all these really deep things going on in our culture right now that this is talking about.
Yeah.
What are those broad things going on for you?
Well, I mean, first of all, I want to just say that there is a significance to the series that is for me threefold. I mean, the first is that it does acknowledge the walls of hostility that do and have existed between us. The way that they talk about it in Charlotte, and they actually don't talk about it this way at all. In fact, they don't really talk about it very much, except a few allusions to it in Bridgerton. But they talk about it clearly in Queen Charlotte when they talk about the sides, our side, their side, the black side, the white side, our side and their side never mix, right? And Lady Danbury says at one point in episode one. And so how could this be? How could she be invited to the royal wedding? Whoa, now all the pieces fall into place as Black Queen Charlotte walks down the aisle. And do you remember what the princess said, the queen mother said to Charlotte when she first said, I have my own wedding gown and it's beautiful. And what the queen tried to do was to dull her down.
Mm-hmm. So we have a traditional dress for you.
We prefer plain.
Plain, right?
Yeah, white.
Let me just say, I experienced that as an African-American woman living in a majority white world. Mm-hmm. I have experienced, not just world, when I've gone and worked in majority white spaces, like you think you have to fit in and you have to wear their clothing and shrink yourself in order to kind of not intimidate. But what is so amazing about that moment when she walks down that aisle is that she says, forget this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to intimidate. Yeah. I am going to be all of who I am.
And yeah, so I felt like she was like, I'm going to be me. This is what I'm bringing to this relationship marriage, because I felt like one of the geniuses of the writing of this series is the way that they intersect race and gender so well as well. So you have this very disempowered female character, like she's being sold off in marriage in a way that she has not even met this man and she doesn't even want this. So she's not chosen this thing. Right. But then you have this like crazy strong female lead who really like literally rescues the king and the mon, like, so it's this it's really complex in such beautiful ways.
Yeah. And actually the true story is that, I mean, that actually is the true story. And many, she ruled, like she actually did rule. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because another thing that is also true from Bridgerton, from Queen Charlotte, she actually did rule the marriages of the ton. You know, of the court.
Oh, wow.
That was one of her big obsessions, was to marry people off and to kind of manage the love lives of all the people in the court. So that's real, is that this was a true love story and it really did unite the sides. But
was that part of the marrying, was the mixing? Was that what she was trying to do, was bring the sides together, or was it just more a hobby?
I don't know that. I do not know that. That would be interesting for someone who's an actual scholar of this stuff, which is not me. I'm sure they could answer that.
You could have fooled us.
No, I just know how to Google, right? Like I know Google. But you know, imagine another way of being together in the world. That's what Shonda Rhimes is calling us to do through Queen Charlotte. Because actually, there are breaks from what actually happened as well, right? So they actually didn't have that moment in the parlor where the queen's mother says, oh, she's darker than I imagined. And then they say, this is a problem. And they're like, this is a problem? Yes, this is a problem. And then the queen mother actually says, but wait, we are the palace. And it's only a problem if we say it is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they say, is that true? And they go, yeah, actually that is true. So then they say, well, we're going to say, this is not a problem. This is intentional. And that's where you get the integration of the sides. That's what brings the integration of the sides.
They talk about this experiment. So they're like, we're going to do the great experiment. And that's where they start titling people of African descent, so that the queen, so we make this normal.
Right. We make it normative that the Danbury's now become Lady and Lord Danbury. Mm-hmm. And then you get Lady and Lord XYZ, right? Like all of these, now you have an integration of the ton, which of course is the court. Mm-hmm. Now that never did happen. That right. didn't happen. The experiment right. never happened. So right. instead, what you had was you had a darker hue Queen Charlotte come into an anti-Black world mm. that remained anti-Black.
Mm.
And what could have happened mm-hmm. had they had that revelation that what we say is what goes.
Mm.
What yeah. we are the law. And that was really true. We are the government. What we say is what goes. And for us, that was the revelation that we had in 19, well, a couple of times, one in 1863 with the Emancipation Proclamation. That's my dog, you know, here in the U.S. And then also again, with the passage of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act in America, what we said went. We changed the way that we interacted together in the world by proclamation, by the force of law. But it's unfortunate that it takes 100 years, it takes a war in order for us to do that. And now in America, we have people who are literally trying to beat back those proclamations and change the law again and have successfully been changing that law again, beating us right back. We are now in the United States of America living in an age that has fewer rights and protections for people of African descent than we did in 1963.
Wow. Wow.
1964, when the Civil Rights Act passed.
Well, and even to keep going along the lines of what you're suggesting is they obviously have the power to make laws because they're making laws just in the wrong direction.
Yes.
But I've had this conversation with so many different like denominations and organizations and to say like, cause they'll be like, we can't do that. And I'm like, you're the ones who created the thing that says you can't do it.
Right.
Like, I'm like, in what world do you live? You made up the regulation. Like you right. can change the regulation that you made to stop yourself from making the regulation. Like this right. idea that we can change things and that we can decide to change for the good of the future and the good of all of us is real and true and needs to be like shouted from a million different mountaintops.
Right.
I love it so much.
That's such a combat against cynicism, right? I feel that one of the great kind of evils of our age is this kind of cynicism, which I understand. I mean, like, everything's expensive and the oceans are going to boil soon. Like, I get why people are kind of giving up. Yeah. But to have that permeated all the way through, is that, well, you know, there's nothing we can do. Like, no, there absolutely is. You can do something. You just need to choose to do it, especially the people that have the power in the situation, right? That's yes. who we really want to be focusing this towards.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, throughout Bridgerton, before we had Queen Charlotte, before we knew the backstory, we didn't know why we had this integrated world where they barely even talk about the fact that they're so integrated. But the fact that it was the decision in this imaginary world, it was the decision of this white woman who was simply desperate for her son to have a queen who mm-hmm. would be desperate enough to stick with him once she realized that he was, you know, that he was suffering from mania, from different forms of mania. Mm-hmm. And so what would that look like? Now, obviously, she actually, we know Queen Charlotte was not desperate. She was simply in love. She loved this man, and that's why she stuck with him. But the motivation of the queen for getting a Black princess in this story is we need somebody who's going to really appreciate being the queen and understand how important this is and how, you know, for her to stick with it. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to the Danbury Ball in the actual story of Queen Charlotte. In that Danbury Ball, you see the integration of the court, not only by law, but now by practice through the dance, through the practice of building relationships. And you see at the end of it, the two are, you know, King George III and Queen Charlotte are sitting there in her parlor. And he says, what we did tonight, we just moved everything forward more than we have for the last century in the United Kingdom. We have moved things forward. And what are you talking about? Race relations, the sides. Why? Because they created a space where the unimaginable happened.
Mm.
It happened. So now we can now imagine it. And if we can imagine it, we can do it. We can live it. And that, I had to say, that is the power. That is the power of Sandra Rhimes. She imagines it. She puts the stories out there so that we can imagine it. Mm-hmm. She's expanded our imaginations so that we can live it.
Well, this also reminds me of like characters throughout history who did what couldn't be done, right? So yeah. Even in the race conversation, you know, like even, you know, I think Nelson Mandela in South Africa is a lawyer who stands up against a government in a public court. I mean, it yes. has not ever been done. No one's ever done this before. And that's so as right. soon as people see it done, you know, it sparks like a movement. So there's yes. something powerful about even that idea. And even like, it could it be a dance or could it be a courtroom or could it be, you know, somebody's speaking something publicly or goes to a place they're not allowed to go or, yes. you know, uncovers themselves when they're not allowed to be uncovered, whatever yes. the scenario is, where all it's like, it. We are the prophetic imagination for a culture, you know, which is Brueggemann suggesting and many other people saying like, this is our role in society is to help people imagine the possibilities of what could
yes.
be.
Yes. In fact, what I often say when I'm training people, you know, in movement building is that what it looks like, what is the role of the organizer, the activist, much like in scripture with Ezekiel, when God actually gives Ezekiel things to do in order to communicate truth to the religious leaders and also to the royalty of the day, God tells, you know, Ezekiel to go out and lay on his side, right? And literally lay there for a long time at the steps of the king and to do this and that. And it's very theatrical, but it's a message. And what these messages are meant to do is to bring what is normally invisible into the realm of the visible. Tells Jeremiah to go out and take clay pots and crash them to the ground and say, this is what you are doing to my people, right? Like, and then what we see with the civil rights movement, when Rosa Parks sat down on that bus and said no, she wasn't just saying no to, you know, because she's tired, no to getting up because she's tired. Rosa Parks said no to the spiritual lie that some people were just made to be slaves and others were just made to be masters. And instead she lived the truth in the face of the lie. And that was the power. She lived the truth of her humanity. I too am created for equal protection of the law. I too should be able to sit in any seat in any public space that my bottom wants to sit in because I am human. So ultimately, what this amazing piece of art has done for us and what activism and organizing does for us is it begs the question for us of who do we really consider to be human? Who do we consider to exist with inherent dignity? Because that is really the gasp moment when she walks down the aisle, isn't it? With her African hair in full, without hiding it. And her hair is her glory.
Yeah.
In that scene, right? And becomes the glory throughout the rest of her life. Her hair is, this is political. I had a moment back in the 1990s. before I went natural, when I had been straightening my hair since I was in high school, I did not know what my natural hair looked like. I was afraid to see what my natural hair looked like. I literally did not know it. I didn't know. Wow. And why? Because I, from the time I was in junior high, was immersed in white community. And my goal was to fit in and have friends. And if I didn't, you know, straighten my hair, that would be one more mark against me. It would be one more hurdle to be overcome. And so I'm sitting there, I'm 30 something years old and I'm hurting for cash because I'm, you know, volunteering with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship on in this evangelical mission agency on college campuses, not getting paid, hello, but still working 40 hours a week for them and also doing another job on the side and really struggling financially. And I have this meeting with my supervisor, white man, And he says, well, you know, I'm looking at your budget and these are some things you can cut. One of the things you can cut is this monthly, and it's monthly, it's not even weekly, which is what most Black women do. This monthly visit to your hairstylist, your hairdresser. And I just said, no, like, no, we will not do that. That is not an option. You do not even understand what you were asking me to do. What you are asking me to do is to be political with my hair, because in the entire world, the only thing that separates Blackness, Black people from non-Black people is our hair.
Wow.
Because there are people who are darker, much darker than me, India, who are not considered Black.
Wow.
Because they have straight hair. Wow. There are people who are much darker than me, who are Aboriginal in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not considered Black, although actually on their census, there was a category for Black, which they did do because that's a whole other story. It's political categorization, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Blackness has been equated with our hair. So when she, this queen, walks down the aisle with her hair as her glory, I cannot tell you how that took my breath away. And it reminded me of the moment that I decided in 2001 to go natural and what that took, you know, what it took from God. God had to literally show up in a prayer service with people speaking tongues over me and wrestle with me in my prayer, my prayer time and in my quiet, demanding that I agree with God that God had made me well. Because I kept answering God, who was saying, agree with me that I made you well. I kept answering, no, I don't agree with you.
Wow.
And I had all the evidence for the reason why I didn't agree. And then finally, God showed me that I have been made with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The diversity of who I am is there is method to the madness. And the next day, somebody came up to me who was there and said, the Lord's given me a word for you. And I'm always kind of shaky when people do that, but whatever. Really. And she said, by the way, she was at that gathering of Black staff within InterVarsity and never returned. I never saw her again after this gathering. But she said, the Lord's word for you is God wants you to stop being chemically dependent. And I literally looked at her and said, I'm not on drugs. What are you talking about? And she said, your hair.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
And it took about 6 months after that. But about 6 months after that, I went to my hairdresser and I said, I want you to help me to go natural. And she helped me to go natural over the course of the next 6 months till it was all cut out. And I saw my own natural hair and I loved it.
Mm.
And what I found is that Black women who straighten their hair, do it for all kinds of reasons. And ultimately, you do want to get to the place where it's just hair and you can do whatever you want, which is one of the reasons why I love Queen Charlotte, because she kind of plays with her hair, right? She does all kind of stuff with it. Like she got flowers up in there. So, you know, it's looking like a bowl at one point. Another point, it's like this afro, like a full.
Oh, one time it's like a tower.
As the older Queen Charlotte.
I don't know how her neck is holding this. I mean, it went like to the heavens at one point. Yeah,
exactly. And actually I have to say that in some of that is actually inspired by the pictures of Queen Charlotte. So if you look at those pictures of Queen Charlotte, her hair literally is way up there like a tower.
Cool.
And you can see that it is not straight. It's actually African hair. It's coarse hair. And so, I went natural and I found myself. I realized my face popped. Like all of a sudden I could see the beauty that was me when I allowed my hair to be as it was meant to be. And that's what I find with most Black women who go natural is all of a sudden their beauty just pops.
Wow. I love that so much. Have you ever heard Micah Mornay's poem, Normal Hair?
Oh, I think so. And I mean, it's been a long time
so
since I've heard
powerful,
stuff.
But it's like based on it when he went to live with somebody and the shampoo said shampoo for normal hair. And by normal, they meant white. And so he does this whole spoken. It's just very powerful. I tell everyone, go YouTube it. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
One of the things that's striking me, first of all, what a beautiful, beautiful story. Thank you. Thank God he liberated you to agree with him that you are fearfully, wonderfully, beautifully made. Yes. And you are a specimen of beauty, my friend. We're celebrating it over here. What I also love though, too, that happens in you, I see this in your life and I see it in this show in Queen Charlotte, is when she comes into that agreement and lives into that space, it begins to liberate other people too.
Yeah.
And this is the great thing about liberation, is that as you walk into your own freedom, it begins, and that in the movie, I don't know if this is true in real life, but in the movie, you can see that the king, that's kind of when he falls in love with her.
Yes.
And of course he does, because she is free in a way that he is not.
Yes.
And this is the thing. This is the thing that's so incredible about even diversity as strength and freedom and walking in your own identity, is that you have like the most powerful man on the planet who's hiding.
Literally.
He's afraid. He's terrified. He cannot be himself. And it's all because like we hear a bit of his backstory of self-loathing, and then he was beaten by his grandfather and he lost his dad. So he's got all this trauma, and then he's got this mental illness that's attached to this trauma. Mm-hmm. And his own self-loathing, his own difference has made him this like, you know, derivative sort of hidden, like, what are we going to do? And you just see like, as she begins to go, oh, I'm this person, he actually gets a glimpse of like, oh, maybe I'm also something worthy to be loved. Cause that's the big thing going on in that love story, is that he's like, I'm not worthy of love and I'm gonna ruin your life and all this stuff. So it's so complex, but I thought it was so beautiful, because sometimes we think that culture would tell us that Queen Charlotte, because she's a minority in that situation, doesn't have power, but her power is actually in her ability to be who she is.
Right. All of who she is.
Yes.
So she is all of who she is in her hair. She is all of who she is in her face. She's not lightening her face.
Nope. Her culture, her gown, her expression. Her,
And in the fact that she is queen.
Yes.
Did you remember that moment that she actually realizes, I am queen and I'm going to go be the queen? Mm-hmm. That is the moment when everything turns.
Yeah.
And it takes 3 out of 6 episodes for her to get there. Yeah. So it's at the end of the third episode, I believe, or maybe it's in the beginning of the fourth episode, when she makes that realization. And it's then that she goes and she gets her king and she says, this is how we gonna do this. Right. And it's the living in. Now here's the thing. This is theological. Mm-hmm. This goes right back to the question of who is human. What does it mean to be human? Mm-hmm. Because what it means to be human is to be made in the image of God, mm-hmm. to be made as one who was called and created by God to exercise dominion in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, Queen Charlotte had the benefit of literally being a queen. And so the minute that she decides, I am going to claim my queendom, why am I listening to this princess who is not the queen?
Right.
She is not the regent and she's not in charge
anymore.
Or
to my servant who's telling me what I can and cannot do.
Or to my servant, right? I am.
Yes.
Right?
That's so good.
She says, this is what we're going to do. And she says, do this. Do you think that you can say no to me? And then they realize, oh, we really can't say no to her. And then they do it. And so she rules. Now, the thing is, humanity was created to rule. All humanity was created to exercise dominion on the earth. And the lie, the core lie of human hierarchies of belonging is that only some created to exercise dominion in the earth. Mm-hmm. And so for all of us, for me, the moment that I realized I am fully human, I am created to to steward the world. Mm-hmm. I don't need to come in under someone who's white in order to have them give me cover as I give them great ideas that they then, impact in the world and then take credit for. Hello. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I don't need to do that. I can actually decide mm-hmm. as as President Bush, and I never in my whole life thought I would quote him, but as
he's
President
the guy Bush, you're going to
once said, I know I never thought I'd quote him, but he did say, I'm the decider. Didn't he say that? I'm the decider.
Oh, interesting.
And he was actually wrong at the point because he's the president. It's not a, he's not a king.
Right.
Congress. But in a sense of us all being made in the image of God, we all have the right to decide.
Oh, I'm thinking so many. I have so many like faces in my mind of leaders who lead organizations who say the lawyers tell me I can't. The consultant told me I shouldn't. The right. crowdsource, you know, the marketing people told me this will be suicide, you know, but you mm-hmm. know, it's the right thing to do. And you just will not do it because you keep coming under people's authority that are not the person to lead. They're not the leader. That's why they're not leading.
That's
so
exactly
it's like,
right.
I agree so much with this, that you can be the leader that you are called to be in order to steward like the future, like to do yes. good things for the world. That's why you're leading, you know, to do beautiful yes. things. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that a lot of the problems that we have in the world right now are here because of abdication of leadership from people who were appointed, anointed, hired to actually lead.
Yes.
And who failed to lead. Instead, what they did was they did what they could enough that they could still maintain their power. Mm-hmm. But imagine if Harriet Tubman had not led. Imagine if Frederick Douglass had not led. Imagine if Abraham Lincoln in the American context had mm-hmm. not led.
Right.
Imagine if MLK or mm-hmm. Fannie Lou Hamer had mm-hmm. not led. Imagine if Susan B. Anthony had accepted the space, the realm that society placed them in the hierarchies of human belonging that were set for them. But instead, what they did was they knew the truth mm-hmm. that they too were created in the image of God, called to exercise dominion in the world. And they lived that truth mm-hmm. in the face of the lie and changed the future because of it.
One of the problems right now is we have people perhaps leading who really shouldn't and people that should be leading that aren't. One of the things that's really striking me as well is, yeah, it's like she decides to be queen and she's going to do it. And I think when I think about people who are oppressed in various contexts, so people of color massively, my friends, the queer community, and so much of the pushback against them ultimately demanding their rights, which is to say, like, you need to accept me as human. And then the response is like, well, we need to have a nice patient conversation and you need to convince me. And I'm going to throw all this barb and all these hatred. And as soon as you rise, you've proved my point that you can't just have a conversation about it. It's like, no, I'm just going to do. And this is why I like Shonda Rhimes, because there's and Brueggemann talks about prophetic imagination. She kind of does prophetic creation in a way, like she's created this world that again yes. gives us something to aim for. And again, it's like, no, I'm not going to ask for your permission right. to be treated as a human. Like, that's not like, I'm not going to ask for it nicely either.
Right.
Like, this is something I deserve and I'm entitled to by virtue that I am created in the image and likeness of God forever. Yes. Like, yes. don't ever think that can be taken away. So no, I don't need to have a nice debate about where we score points of each other. This is right. true forever. The end.
The end, period. End of statement, period. Like for example, in the US, even with this LGBTQ question, right? So back in the day, in the 1990s, I was solidly in a fundamentalist stream of the evangelical church. They would never call themselves fundamentalists. They would poo-poo that. But the reality of the story.
We all know though, don't we?
church. And you know, very, very strongly against LGBTQ. I don't think I ever preached against it, but I did speak against it, against the whole thing. You know, this is Satan. This is blah, blah, blah. It's trying to take people down, all the things. And then you had Ellen, and then you had Sex and the City, and then you had Grace, Will and Grace. And I boycotted all of those. I just boycotted them all. I was like, no, because they're trying to take us all to hell, all the things. Then I actually watched, like I actually, because I was staying at my sister's swim time and I watched some Sex and the City, and I just began to see the possibility that these people are human. And then I watched Will and Grace, one episode, and I kind of got hooked because they were just funny. I mean, I was laughing my butt off. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, they're hilarious. And I was like, in the same way that I watched Queen Charlotte, I was like watching it again and again, because they were human. And then as I began to see them as human, I began to question, now, what is it? How does this work? If I'm saying that they can't marry, they can't, because that's a right. We actually say the ability to marry is a human right. And, you know, if we, in my context, in the US, we are in a democracy, a pluralistic democracy, where we have as the very first amendment of our constitution is the forbidding of an establishment of any religion, any one religion. How can I then legislate my religion when there are other religions who don't view it the same way, who are living here too and are also citizens? And then I went into scripture, right? And I went back and this is not supposed to be that kind of an apologetic time, but I will just say that it was Will and Grace and Sex and the City and Ellen who gave me the ability to see the possibility of a world where we are all equally human. And that then gave me the ability to reimagine how the law should be.
Lisa, I want to ask you one more question. I love all that. And I think it's great because it also is the power of people stepping into their identity and definitely the cost of it, but also the reason the cost is so high is because the power is so great. So Let this be a shout out to whoever needs to hear this, that's listening to this, please step into the identity that you have proudly and in agreement with God so that you can do what it is that you've been called to do and to help the people you've been called to help. One of the things I wondered about, and this will be sort of our last, because we gotta finish, even though we could talk all day about this.
I know.
Going two potter. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
There's quite a bit of dialogue, conversation, and scenes around kind of the responsibility of a person who is a minority with power. So this actually made me think about that even when it comes to the queer folk conversation and all women in certain places and, you know, African descent in England. Mm-hmm. Like, so it seems like there's an unfair expectation when I'm doing things around women and men leading together. I always say, like, beware of the only syndrome, which is where you make this one woman an exception to all the rules and then expect her to change everything. Like it's a recipe for disaster, both for the woman, but also for the culture. It won't shift. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of that going on. And then there's a bit of this nuanced conversation about of these other, and I guess that's where the experiment is kind of drawn into this thing, because reality is the only syndrome didn't work.
That's right. That's right.
And it will never work. There will always be exceptional people in history that you can't deny. But what we want to do is we want to move beyond the exception into the normalization of people moving into systems and structures and their gifts. And so I guess I wanted to ask you about that piece, just as a proud Black woman yourself, mm-hmm. in places that are predominantly other, you know, where you're othered and maybe often the exception, how do you fight against that? What's the recipe to what do we do?
Well, I mean, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because one of the moments in Queen Charlotte that really, again, like made me gasp was that moment when Lady Danbury comes to her and says, "What are you doing? What are you doing? You are so focused on your relationship and whether it's going to be okay or not with the king. But don't you realize we are depending on you? Mm-hmm. Like, we are here because of you. And if you fail, we fail. Like, everything we have will be stripped from us. You have to wake up." I actually had a moment like that. Not where I was called to the carpet in quite the same way, where it was like, wake up. Mm-hmm. But where one of my mentees, one of the women who was coming up, not under me, but who I was mentoring, she made it clear to me. She said, "Lisa, you are the first." When I was the first person in the C-suites of Sojourners, person of color, And this is Sojourners, especially at the time, was really at the height of its power in Washington, D.C. It was moving and shaking. Mm-hmm. And I was the first person of African descent to have a chief next to my name in Sojourners. Mm-hmm. And this mentee of mine said, "We are watching you. You are inspiring us." And I tell you what I did. I held it and then I set it aside, mm-hmm. because I could not be the person who held that, you know, held responsibility for all the Black people, you know, in Christendom, or especially in that stream of Christendom for all time, right? Like, there was no way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also, what she was also saying is, you are accountable to us.
Mm.
What you do will impact us.
Mm-hmm.
So know that what you say, how you say they should move, the direction that you take them, especially in terms of mobilizing for this, that, or the other thing, whether you choose to mobilize around race or you choose to mobilize around this, that, or the other thing, if race is on the chopping block, which it was at one point, you know, when I first got there, it really wasn't on the block. It was other things.
Mm-hmm.
That will impact us. Now, I'm no longer at Sojourners. I have run my own company, Freedom Road. It's an LLC. It is not a nonprofit. We are for profit. Thank you very much. Because I am never going to be poor again. never again. And that's because it's not just,
mm-hmm.
just not to pay just wages. And so mm-hmm. I demand just wages.
Mm-hmm.
But especially in this place, right, where now I am, you know, kind of cutting, I feel like I'm cutting road for mm-hmm. other young Black entrepreneur women who are coming up mm-hmm. and will start their own businesses. And the fees that I set for myself will set the bar for them.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment that I allow myself to take when mm-hmm. working with people of European descent, whether they treat me with dignity or not, if I allow that mm-hmm. in dignity, then I am setting the bar for my mentees who are coming up. They also will have to suck up indignity, or the indignity that they experience will be my fault
mm-hmm.
because I didn't, I will have failed to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
So even recently, you know, recently I had, you know, an experience where I was treated with absolute disrespect and absolute indignity by a white man, white conservative man, you know, from the Southern religious community, right?
His address and I'll go through.
I will.
Burn it down someone's house soon. Just send it through, Lisa.
Well, let me tell you, I had to make a decision. How am I going to engage this? Am I just going to be silent and kind of slink away? You know, just, you know, kind of dust in feet, which, you know, I know that I'm somebody. He doesn't have to know am I going to do that, which is what I might have done in the olden days, maybe even just 6 years ago. But I didn't. Instead, I wrote a 7-page paper that said, this is how you've sinned against me. And this is the cost of your sin against me. And in the vein of reparative justice, this is what repair will require. Why did I do that? Because I too am made in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
I am royalty in the eyes of God, and you have disrespected royalty.
And God.
Mm-hmm. And if I did not do that, then you would think it's okay
mm-hmm.
for others to treat others this way. And the Black people who follow you
mm-hmm.
would think it's okay for them to be treated this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I am here to say no more, just like Rosa Parks said no more on that bus.
Love it. I love what you do and who you are. And the more, you know, and also this idea that, like, as you begin, I think about that journey you've been on of stepping into this identity that you have. And then the more you step into that, you know, the more you grow into that as well, which is, I can't even imagine what a conversation with you is going to be like in 5 years.
Mm.
Wow. Imagine. I was going to be like,
let's pray.
I'm so excited. anyway, we're thrilled that we were invited through your enthusiasm on Twitter to to embark on a journey of creative imagination that is stunning and beautiful and good. And thanks for the history lesson. Mm-hmm. And thanks for all your thoughts. And our final just kind of sign off is to say, let this provoke you. Let it lead you. Let it let you come into agreement with God. Let it provoke your imagination to become the people that God had always designed us to be. And we hope it's going to help. And also, we hope you have fun watching Queen Charlotte.
There's quite a few bums in it, though, just to warn you. If you're, how do you feel about sex scenes? Because there's a few of those.
Oh, well, you know what? In all of our shows, there's a lot of bums.
On. You know what I'm saying? So, first of all, let me just say, no, you pulled us into this, okay? Like,
that
if we're going to have humanity, we're going to have sex. And if it's going to be sex, it should be good sex.
Okay.
In fact, what we do see in Queen Charlotte is we see two different kinds of sex.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I know you're trying to wrap up, Danielle. Let give this 2 minutes. I think this. Look, Lisa, you got something to say. Look, people can see how long the podcast is going to be. I think this is, please. I think it's really important. Please talk to that, Lisa.
Well, thank you. Okay, I know you were trying to wrap up, but
Danielle, she loses.
It was such
this
a good wrap up, but no, it's
I
good.
Know,
I love
it.
You had so me good. At there's two kinds of sex.
I have so many notes that I'm like,
okay, no, that two kinds of sex.
Yes,
one is exploitative, mm-hmm. and that was the typical. That was what was no, and quite honestly, what is still very, very, very normal and normative mm-hmm. in many marriages that hold as traditional marriages, because there's the wives are told to see themselves as being unable to withhold sex from their husbands even when they don't want it. So what do you think they do? They lie there and
also
they take
just
it.
And also women are just receivers and men are the ones that receive pleasure.
Right.
And so that's the one kind of sex, which right. is true in so many cultures. And it really is just a form of like extreme patriarchal misogyny in a way where a woman's sexual needs aren't acknowledged. Right. You know, the woman's pleasure isn't part of the conversation and actually is wrong to even think or bring up.
Right.
And so we see that there's this young girl married off and then this old kind of ugly guy that's like not a bad guy, but just like their sex life is horrific.
He is old.
Yeah.
And not to say that old is bad, but when she's very young, I mean, why does she exist? She exists to have babies.
Yep.
That's
even
why,
just for his pleasure. For his pleasure. Yeah.
For his mm-hmm. will and to have babies, right? So she actually had babies by him. And then it's for the pleasure. And not even this, it's also for him to just. What is it? Mostly to get off steam, like to get off anxiety and to deal with his own anxiety.
Yeah.
So the woman is meant for the use of the man. Let's just boil it down to that. The woman
Lord
is meant
Danbury.
For the use of the man, Lord Danbury. But what we see in the sex life of Charlotte, Queen Charlotte and King George III is we see, first of all, married. They are married.
Yep.
This is not bad. They are married. And it's not, you know, it's debatable whether it'd be bad anyway, but it's married and it is pleasurable. Mm-hmm. It is a sex life that actually seeks the pleasure of both. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny too, because don't they hide it? Like they kind of go around acting like they're mad at each other and acting like there's nothing going on. But actually when they get behind closed doors, they can't keep their hands off of each other, which is really funny. And I still haven't figured out exactly why they do that. Maybe it's to protect something in the marriage. I don't know. But I thought that was beautiful and mm-hmm. powerful. And again, it also, the thing that kind of made me go like gasp was when I realized, you know what this is going to do? This is going to, in the same way that Scandal, also written by Sandra Rhimes, in the same way that Scandal, which mm-hmm. paired a Black woman the president of the United States in mm-hmm. this illicit affair, actually, right?
Yeah.
So in the same way that Scandal gave us the ability to imagine white men with Black women, mm-hmm. which never happened before Scandal in public. And now you see it all over the place.
Yeah.
This Queen Charlotte is going to give little white boys dreams of marrying a Black woman.
Mm. Wow.
They're going to dream of having sex with a Black woman in a way that is honoring, not exploitative. not just about lust, but about love. And that is something that I'd say before Shonda Rhimes, we could not imagine.
Wow. I didn't know that about, I mean, I know Scandal, but I didn't know that that was the case, that there had
Where?
Yeah.
Never, wow. ever. It was always black men with white women.
Wow. Interesting.
Starting with Sidney Poitier.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
But never black women in love with and loved by a white man. Wow. That was Shonda Rhimes.
Wow. Look at her. She's killing it. She's killing it out here.
Killing it. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's our apology, non-apology for the sexually explicit content of Queen Charlotte.
It was worth talking about.
It's such a bizarre thing for you to bring up, like a rating issue, James. You pick all like R-rated horror films, but now like all of a sudden you're shy with the sex thing. That's hilarious.
I just think it's hilarious that, you know, again, I wouldn't have, I'm watching this show and my roommate walked in on, you know, Mr. Bum going at it. And he's like, is this what you're into? I'm like, I'm watching it for Lisa Chernoff.
Oh my gosh. Lisa made me watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't mind. You can say that. Lisa made me watch it. Go ahead.
That's so important too. Exactly as you say. This is like obviously really a very difficult topic and horrible, but as you say, this idea of what can be enjoyable, Lord and Lady Danbury, I think, are such like brilliant characters, and her like struggle. I was talking with a friend of mine about this, and she really brought it to my attention, just how much she struggles with both like defending her husband, but also she's his main victim, right? Like he's not accepted by the white people, so he takes it out on her, like sexually, like with kind of sexual violence rather than physical violence. Again, I think it's worth, when we think about all of human history, I mean, in Canada, marital rape only became a crime in the last 40 years. In England, it was about 33 years ago. I don't know what it is in the US.
And in 1995.
Wow,
1995 was the last state that passed a law against rape in the context of marriage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So like I'm younger than y'all, and the fact I was alive, and I go, no, because, you know, the woman's body just belongs to her husband now. The idea, like, you don't even have the option of consent within marriage up until 1995. Like, yes. I think that's something that's tackled well, as you say, as we see both good and bad, and the fact that you have an oppressed person who then takes that out on someone with less power than them, and she's haunted by it, but she doesn't have any choices. Like, it's, yeah, I think those characters are really intriguing to me. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, the complexity of, and the intersectionality of the things within that show are like extraordinary. It's worth watching again, just to pay attention to some of that stuff.
Yes. Amazing. Amen.
Anyway, we're thankful, Lisa. Keep going. Freedom Road. Where do people find you on the internet?
They find me at lisasharonharper.com and freedomroad.us and all the socials at Lisa S. Harper or Lisa Sharon Harper if you are on Facebook.
Love it. Everybody go follow. You're going to learn lots. Appreciate you. Keep it up.
Thank you. Ditto.